Hey everyone, Mr. Devil here, Kenny Danico, three-time Stanley Cup champion of the New Jersey Devils, and you're listening to the Uncle Puckers New Jersey Devils podcast. Let's go, Devils!
That's awesome.
That's cool, right?
I love it. Very cool.
Yeah, Bobby did a good job with that.
He did. Bobby's like master editor now.
He's cock master editor.
That's right. I thought maybe it'd be like chopped and sound weird, but it sounded good. You like the what?
The flame sound in my ear. Like fired up. Yeah.
You're like ready to go fucking Top Gun on this shit.
I think if I turned that on in a car, I'd be like, I'm having an aneurysm or this is going to be the best show ever.
I got to go faster, man.
Like Chris listened to Rangers podcast, just dancing in his car by himself.
I do. I listen to Ranger podcasts all the time. They're so much fun to listen to. I just love
like a hate listen. Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. And it's just the meltdown that every single one of these guys are having. There are a couple that are like kind of know hockey and they kind of are like, yeah, we thought this was going to happen. You know, I guess Biz was a year early in his prediction of the Ranger demise, right?
Last year,
he said that they're frauds and their fan base is frauds and they're going to show it. And all they did was win the President's Trophy. So he was just a year off.
It's true. Yeah. So this is now the definition of Schadenfreude. Are you sitting there listening, laughing your ass off?
It is. It's so much fun. And they play the Dallas Stars tonight. They're coming off of a win, right? They won, or did they win their last game, or did they? No, they lost their last game. I think the Rangers.
I think they have. I think they've had a couple of moral victories where they played well, but they lost to Florida and then someone else who's good too.
How many points do you get in the NHL for the moral victories?
Absolutely nothing.
That's right. That's right.
Carry the one. Divide by two. Yeah, it's zero.
So what are their playoff chances right now?
Slim the Nun and Slim just left town.
They're not mathematically eliminated, but they're quite a ways back, right?
They're eliminated. I don't think there's a chance in hell that they make the playoffs.
Wow.
It's so hard to make up points when you're out of it. They lost the Capitals. That's right.
Yeah, that's the right. Capitals. And not just the making up points, it's you have to jump teams. Like, it's one thing if you are, you know, right outside the last wild card spot, 4 points, and Tampa or Ottawa is sitting in that last wild card spot. And you can look at that one team and say, that's the team we have to catch. We keep our eyes on them and we can catch them. But they don't have to do that. They have to jump, like, I think everybody in the Metropolitan. Maybe with the exception of the Islanders.
Maybe the Islanders,
Essentially everybody in the Atlantic, with the exception of I don't know, Montreal, maybe. I didn't think Montreal is right around the same points as that they have.
Right.
Yeah, so, I'm looking at it right now. So Tampa and Montreal by points sit in those two wild card spots. Montreal's tied with the Penguins. No, Montreal.
Montreal has the second wild card spot?
By points. Ottawa still has by points percentage. Yeah, that's Montreal's been on a little tear recently.
Yeah, they have been playing well. They had a great holiday break, you know.
Well, five foot four Bobby Orr had 3 points the other night.
I can't. Is that the behind the bench guys too? Like, you can't be more than 5'4" to be playing or coaching for the Habs now?
I read enough of the short jokes.
You brought it up. So all right, so yeah, so how many teams are, how many points do the Rangers have?
They have 37. Tampa or Montreal has. That was such an evil laugh. Montreal is 41. I mean, so like there's 4 points separating, but those are a lot of, like, those 4 points are always hard. Like, we found this out last year.
Sure.
Well,
yeah.
How many teams do they have to jump?
We were right there. Like, I was up there to the end. I was like, I'm doing the math on a napkin. Like, we could still do this.
Yeah. That was Bobby. That was poor Bobby, who was just. He was hopeful right up until he wasn't. And I felt bad for him because I said in November, I think me and Dan, November, beginning of December, were like, they're not making the playoffs, Bob. And nope,
it would have to be a different team, you know?
Yeah.
But this year, we are making the playoffs.
Yeah, it's hard to see a scenario where they don't go into the playoffs looking like, you know, a favorite.
Well, so you said that the Habs have that second wild card, right? So
by
40
points. So like Ottawa technically is better based on their points percentage because of games played. More games. But they're basically even. Like it's 40 points and 41 points.
But yet they would still have to jump the Senators, the Red Wings, the Penguins, the Blue Jackets, and the Flyers.
Correct.
So, you know, I get it. It's only 4 points or whatever. But you have to jump all those teams.
Right.
You know, that's where it becomes an almost impossibility.
Right.
Now Chris Kreider's on IR, so there's no hope of them trading him, which is what they apparently wanted to do. Tim, you had sent something over that apparently they wanted JT Miller for Mika Zibanejad straight up, and Vancouver was like, well, don't be throwing your shit-ass problems up our way, okay? We got enough of our fucking own shit. We don't need Mika Zibanejad here.
I don't know how that stuff gets public, but, like, that's fucking embarrassing if Fury is offering just one-for-one Mika Zibanejad for JT Miller. And I don't know if he's just trying to take advantage of Vancouver and, you know, the salary differentials. Actually, I don't even know if they're that different.
There's not much.
But I, like, think that's insane. That's like the fantasy football trades that I try to make with my team. And they're like, fuck you, Tim, go away.
But you see, that's not why they tell you that, Tim. It's not because of your trades.
So,
but
don't be mean to me, Chris.
The one for one, maybe you get away with that last year during the summer. I think maybe, but it's just Mika Zibanejad is a shell of himself. And yeah. I think the reason that Drury is trying to make that move is because JT Miller had said that he has a no trade clause. He would waive that to go to New York. So I'm guessing they were kind of just hoping that if they can just push him hard enough, maybe they can get that deal done. But if I'm Vancouver, I don't move off of either of these guys until it becomes an unattainable situation. You know, if you just have to, I don't think they've gotten there yet. I mean, JT Miller had 2 goals last night. So the problems between him and Pedersen haven't destroyed this locker room to the point where they're not winning.
There's a video of them hugging on the bench yesterday. I think a lot of this is largely media narrative bullshit because they're two guys with two different personalities that's getting spun out of control.
I saw the video where they were 69ing each other in the sauna. I was like, that's not showing friendship. I don't know what is.
Yeah, by the way, can you never shared the password for that site where you got that video?
I could use that.
Uncle Puckers. Password for everything is Uncle Puckers.
So off of the shitty ass Rangers, we have broken our 4-game losing streak, boys.
Yeah.
And you know,
what a great way to do it.
I mean, we talked about it. How do you get out of these slumps? And sometimes it's, you know, a great individual effort. Sometimes it's just the team remembering who they are and getting back to playing the way that they want to play and they can play. Sometimes it's just an inferior team that you just can't help but beat. Other times your goalie just straight up steals shit. And that's what happened last night in that third period. I mean, Jacob Markstrom was unbelievable last night.
Yeah, he was so good. One of the best goaltending displays that the Devils have had since you've had Brodeur on the, you know, I mean, it really was. He stole that game. He played so well, some crazy saves, circus saves. And he was just so good in that game. There's no way they win that with a lesser performance. You know, Seattle wasn't going to make it easy for them at all. And I was just super impressed. I mean, those saves were incredible. I ended up watching the recap because it was unfortunately too late for me. And I got the Seattle feed and that, you know, glove save early in the third where he scoops it off the ice on what is a nice backdoor stuff it in play. You know, that guy's calling it the save of the game, maybe the save of the year. And then he comes up with that crazy combination, right pad and rebounds comes out and he's catches it with his blade right around the heel area. And like this stick windmill from right to left, it was just a thing of beauty. He looked so sharp.
As the resident goalie, which one was where you like, I can't believe he just fucking did that. Like, I mean, they were all pretty sick, but
yeah.
Like, which one are you like? I have no idea how he even fucking managed to do that.
You know, if you're gonna save a shot, for, you know, from your side with the heel of your stick, you know, coming across like that, that probably wins it there. But that scoop off the ice was fantastic as well. I mean, they're two different kinds of saves. And you know what, too? It wasn't just a couple of those grandiose circus saves. He had breakaways. He had, you know, really good passing plays thrown at him that he was just equal to the task. And he looked fantastic. And, you know, Seattle, Grubauer played a great game. you know, I guess you could knock him for the 5-hole goal, but not really. It was such a sneaky play. And he made some tremendous saves. So you were like locked in for some great goaltending in that game. That was definitely one to watch if you want to see great goaltending. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, that was incredible. We don't want our goalie to have to make saves like that. But if we're going to put him in that position, it's pretty amazing that he has. You know, that game is 7-1. You know, last year.
Yeah, and over the course of a season, if you're going to be a top team, your goalie's going to come up with saves like that. It's going to happen. You don't rely on it every night, but you know, there was no doubt. Like, okay, you definitely have a money goaltender here. You know, yeah. Makes you super excited what he could do. I mean, when you win a game like that with those kind of saves, that is such a huge thing in a playoff scenario. So it makes you so like ready for the playoffs. And wow, we got a guy we can run with. We feel really comfortable with the goaltending we're getting. You know, is he the best goaltender ever played a game? No. Could he be the best goaltender in this playoff series this year? Yeah, he could. You know, and that's exciting. I don't think we could have said that, honestly, about anybody we've had since Brodeur. So, no. I mean, what an amazing time for goaltending in New Jersey again.
And this is part of, like, you know, when he came over, when we were super excited about it. And the one thing that I kept going back to is, and I didn't think the Rangers were going to be this. I honestly said it a million times. I thought the Metropolitan was a two-team race. I thought it was just going to be New York and New Jersey.
Sure.
Right up until the end. And it would be a matter of 2 or 3 point swing for whoever was going to get it. It was going to be one win against the other, or something that was going to kind of be the thing that put one over the other. And that's not the case. But a lot of what I was going with, because you hear it all the time from Ranger fans, yes, but we have Shesterkin. He can steal a series. He can steal this. Well, now the Devils have a guy that can steal a series. It's not just the Rangers. It's not just Jeremy Swayman. It's not just Bobrovsky in Florida anymore. Now the Devils have that guy. And that makes us an extremely dangerous team if we can figure out everything else.
Right.
And, you know, last night, I also think it was huge when you see where the goals came from, right?
Right.
They came from Mercer Potter, fantastic. And Blatt.
Yep, and, exactly.
You know, these are the guys that we need to start scoring some goals. I thought the Mercer goal was just a really patient, beautiful goal. Took his time. He didn't rush it.
Backhand to forehand.
Yep. And he was able to beat Grubauer. You talked a little bit about that 5-hole goal from Cotter, which was just right. –
And the big assist from Mercer. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it was like kind of like a pass shot that he didn't really mean to pass, and it just ended up, you know, he lost track of the puck, but it ended up going in.
An accidental dangle.
Yeah. And then the Palat goal was just a beautiful pass from Hughes, and Palat was able to bury it, which is something that we've seen him flub more times than not recently. So I was really happy that he actually buried one. And you could see the relief in his face. Like, he knows, like, you know, I'm going to be fucking released. I'm going to be fucking just cut this year. Bought out at the end of this year if I don't start doing something. So,
and I kind of did like that, you know, Capo, he got a goal against the Devils, but not with the Rangers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he looked pretty good in that game. He looks a lot better as a Kraken than he did as a Ranger. So good for him.
It's amazing what happens when, you know, the bus that was stuck on the third line actually gets power play time and first line minutes. But yeah, he had a
post too. That could have
Kako had a nice little assist on Shane Wright's power play goal. Nice little saucer pass from behind the net and caught us kind of napping in front. You know, one of the things about Markstrom when he came over was everything we pointed to was that high danger save percentage. That was like his calling card. You know, I mean, he occasionally will let in one that he probably wants back, but the high danger save percentage was the thing that brought him here. And frankly, if we're going to keep running Dougie and Dylan out, who just bleed 2-on-1s and high danger chances, I don't know what happened to our decor. Like, last night wasn't perfect by any means.
It was not,
And we're bleeding chances left and right. They went through stretches where they were very good. The second and third period were much better than the first. After they scored their first goal, they just fucking fell asleep. I don't know what happened to them. And you could see that first Kraken goal coming, because our fourth line got out there, got stuck out there, pinned, and it was like, all right, it's a matter of time. And of course, it was Adam Larson that scored. You know, former Devil. I'm glad
that's
I put money
they
on
do.
That.
Yeah, what former Devils do. And I'll tell you though, I think this game goes the other way if Cotter doesn't score when he scores. Like coming up with that goal huge late in the period like that. That was exactly what they needed because of exactly what you just said, Tim. They fell asleep at the wheel and they were letting Seattle crawl back into this game. And the first period, after the Devils scored, it was all Seattle. I mean, they were taking it too. The Devils. Devils didn't have any answers for them. And when the Cotter scored that last goal, the second goal rather, that was, I think, a nice, all right, guys, this hasn't gotten out of hand yet. We're still in control. Let's go out and do it. Now, I don't know what's going on with our defensive core and Dougie and Dylan because they
have been so good up until this last stretch.
Yeah, a 7-8 game stretch where they were lights out. And now this last five games, it's been a little rough. Is this like a communication thing? Is it one guy's trying to do too much? Are they both trying to do too much? What do you see from the eye test? Tim, what do you think?
I think it's what you just said. Like the last thing you said is they're trying to do too much. You know, we talked about this the last pod too. It's they're pressing for offense. And when you press for offense and you're pinching too aggressively and a team like Seattle that has really good team speed and can kind of reverse course on you pretty quickly. If you miss a pinch or if you miss kind of play something in the neutral zone, that's coming right back the other way. So when they're pressing too much, that's when we get into these odd man rushes. They also seem to have had some pretty rough breakdowns in the defensive zone on one of those, one of Markstrom's incredible saves. It was a 2-on-1. It was the 3-on-1 save that he had.
That was my favorite one of the night.
Yeah, it was largely a 2-on-1 to start, and then the third. Third guy trailer coming in was the one that actually got the shot.
Yeah, right in the slot.
Right in the slot.
And Dougie is tracking with Tolvanen, who was the one who got the shot where he reached back and made the glove save. Dougie's tracking with that guy, peels off of him, and then just lies down on the ground. And the guy gets the shot off over him, and then Tolvanen's wide open in front of the net. Like, I don't know why he didn't just stay with Tolvanen because there's a back checker right on that guy. He makes some seriously questionable decisions in the defensive zone and defensively. And all we're asking of this guy is just fucking keep it together, man. Like, that's all we ask. You know, we appreciate the offense. You know, I'd like to see that come back. But, like, if you're not contributing offensively, you're brutal defensively, and that makes you, like, a net negative. So we need to do one or the other. Like,
there's a little blame that's slightly different for both of them to go around. Like, I think that when they're pressing in the offensive zone or even, you know, in the neutral zone, sometimes I feel like that's what you expect of Hamilton. So, like, Dylan's got to be there to cover him, you know? Like, that's more his job than the other way around. They're both going to press sometimes, and we're going to need – but then on the defensive end, especially when you're penned in, you're right. That's where it's like, you know, between the two of them, I feel like, Dougie's making more mistakes, you know, and together they're two different, you know, failure types, but like maybe it is just like communication or basically just knowing your role better. I don't know. But yeah, you're right. With those kind of mistakes that Hamilton was making defensively in our end, that's, you know, hurting us every bit as much as when they get caught pressing too hard offensively.
Yeah. I kind of boiled it down to two things. Like, and it actually kind of applies to both Dougie and Dylan. When they have the puck on their stick, they're fine. They're actually good. And when they, and this is for the whole ice surface. And when they don't have the puck on the stick, fucking grab onto your butts because it's going to be a roller coaster. Like, that's really kind of what happens. And, you know, they tend to overcommit, like on the power play goal, the Kako's little saucer pass to Shane Wright. I think Dylan went a little too hard at Kako when he didn't have. When he didn't have the amount of time to get
to hard at the cock.
He went too hard at the cock, left his ass exposed, and Lazar couldn't fill in that hole quick enough, and Kako had enough time. I know. I tried to kind of run with that analogy as best I could.
No, it actually works really well.
Yeah, it does. So it's just, you know, getting back to understanding the time and space that they have, and maybe they need to just take a step back and be a little more conservative, but I don't think that's going to happen. And Luke and Pesci have had a tough couple of games too defensively. Like, actually, Dougie and Dylan graded out as probably our best defensive pair from like an analytics perspective. But that's kind of where some of the analytic numbers fall apart. you know, there's like 70 something percent expected goals, but that's the expected goals against are just like an accumulation based on the shot locations, and it doesn't really take a lot of context into factor.
Right. Yeah. And like, you know, the breakdown, if it's in a big situation, that counts a lot more than a few other breakdowns that weren't.
Right. You give up four breakaways or four point blank chances where Markstrom has to, you know, fucking do some Simone Biles type of shit, like to make the save, you know, that's going to grade out just like, you know, a regular shot from the slot. So it's a little misleading. And actually it's funny because Markstrom's goal save above expected last night were just 0.45. So that doesn't make any sense either.
No, especially with those saves, they were, you know, they look like they're going to make way above expected average, you know?
Yeah. But all in all, they kind of kept it together. They locked it down there at the end. Nason made like one of the kind of more unheralded plays is Nason beating out that icing at the end of the game. To negate that icing, because that if that faceoff came back, I was like, fuck, we're going to get scored on if that icing came back.
Yeah. Yeah, the Kraken never let up. They were a tough team to play. They really were. Well, but you're right. They took the lead every time, and they kept going, you know, and they never really fell apart, which is a nice change after four losses.
And we're going to go over the upcoming schedule, and it is super important that the Devils were able to get out of this funk when they did, because it's not going to get any easier. But first, it's the most wonderful time of the year for getting in on all the hoops, football, and hockey action at DraftKings Sportsbook. And here's a gift for all new customers. Just bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if your bet wins. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. That's code THPN for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets if your bet wins when you bet just $5. Happy holidays from DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bet must win to receive reward. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, visit dkng.co/bball. That's DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. So, boys, we got the Rangers Thursday. Now, listen to this gauntlet over the course of probably the next month, right? It's the Rangers in MSG, and then the Devils come home for two, and that is against the Lightning and against the Panthers. Then they go on the road for their only trip up to Toronto, and we got to play the Leafs. Now, keep in mind, Tampa and Toronto have whooped us each time we played them.
Yep.
And Florida is looking for payback because we went into there and took two games on them back in November. So they're definitely not going to be too happy about that. Then we haven't played the Flyers yet, and we get them at home, and then we get the Senators at home. So Senators are a damn good team right now. And the Flyers, you know, are going to play you hard. They're going to play the right way. They're doing, you know, they're not a great team as far as their talent, but they're a very good team as far as their discipline and their structure, and that can hurt you. And if you're lazy at all, they're going to beat you. Then we go and we play our first game at home against the Bruins. Then we have the Canadiens, who you might say would be an easy one, but it's not because they're now a playoff spot. And then back with the Flyers, and we have a home and home against to finish out January against the Flyers. So this month of January is brutal.
Yeah.
It, you know, they don't turn their shit around and really start playing the way they did in December. This month can really fuck these guys.
Definitely.
So I hope that they are back. I mean, I think that a game at MSG on Thursday night would be the cure for what ails you, right? I mean,
they seem to do well with those high energy games, you know, the rivalry games. So they've been playing the Rangers very well this year, so I'm looking for a boost there. I really hope they all are, like, you know, on the right page of building here and keeping it together. I expect
And they have 2-3 days between games too, so they have time to get over some jet lag, you know, get back to them. And Keith brought this up, all the games over this Christmas break. And I don't want to lean on this too much as an excuse, but like, they're all really weird times. You know, like the New Year's Eve game was, you know, 4 o'clock or 6 o'clock or whatever it was. Then the New Year's Day game was at another weird time. And then
8 o'clock,
the Saturday game was at another weird time.
Yeah,
exactly. So they're all kind of a weird time. It's getting back to regular 7 p.m. games and also having that three day break to kind of get back and get your legs together. And a lot of time to kind of work things out, do some video and just be like, Dougie, stop fucking doing what you're doing. I'm pretty confident that they'll be able to get out of there against the Rangers. Those next three games are just brutal. You know, Toronto for whatever reason has our number, Tampa has our number. But you know, different teams, you know, we'll see what happens.
So what did you guys think about our third and fourth line last night? You know, with Holla out and Dowling taking over that third centered slot. What'd you guys think of how he played there? Don't everybody answer at once.
I mean, it wasn't horrible. It wasn't horrible, I don't think, you know.
Tim, I mean, did you like
think it was that much better than having Holla in?
I did. I thought it was a lot better than having Holla in. I thought he generated offense. Okay. He's, you know, he was great on the faceoff dot. I thought that, you know, that's – I kind of like him there a little bit better than Eric Holla.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I he was good, but he's a career AHLer. You know, let's, you know, I like him. I think, you know, for a couple of games, he'll be an admirable fill in. And he has been. He's actually a very good forechecker and he's noticeable. You know, the most noticeable number 37 I think we've ever had in our history. I don't remember anybody else wearing that number. Not a single player.
I can't think of a 37.
Yeah, definitely had not. Some
goaltender, guy. Maybe.
No, nah, definitely not a guy named Pavel Zacha.
Was he 37?
Zacha? Yeah, he was. He was. That was my joke. I thought you guys were picking up on it, but
I totally forgot that he was 37.
Yeah, see, I forgot he existed until he scores on us when we play Boston. Where is it going? Oh yeah, he's a good forechecker, good in the dot, pretty low event game. You know, I put a little money on him to score a goal because I thought that was kind of the natural way things happened, but he didn't do that. But it's both his line mates scored a goal. I know the Mercer goal was on a line change and it was Timo to Nico to Mercer, but you know, that's all you can ask of the guy. If he can just be that good forechecker, be good in the dot, and just be responsible defensively. The fourth line, man, like, they fucking suck. Like, Tatar and Bastion are just they're absolutely fucking useless. Like,
I mean, Tatar, I really thought he was gonna have we got a slow start, but I thought by now he'd be picking it up more.
Yeah, you know, and I get been
really spotty for him this year.
And I get that we have him on the fourth line where that's probably not really what his skill set is. But I think he's washed.
Where else are you going to put him?
Well, that's exactly my point. It's like, you know, he was brought in originally to probably try and recreate the magic with that Nico Mercer line. And that didn't stick.
Extremely short-sighted if that's where they were going. If that's really what Fitz wanted. Like, to me, I thought they brought him back as an extra utility, dude, a fourth liner, utility guy.
Look at the lineups the first couple games. They had him with Nico and Brat, and then they tried to run out Timo, Brat, and Jack, and that shit didn't fucking work at all either.
I thought that was short-sighted from the beginning. I know a lot of Devil fans were saying that, oh, they're going to recreate that magic. Like, Tim, you've said it a million times about Andre Pallotta, how hard it is to play with players like Jack and Nico. I mean, Jack and Brat, because of their skill level and their speed and all that. And for an older player to kind of, it takes a little while for them to figure that out. I thought that you have a guy that's now 2 years older, 2 years more wear and tear on his tires from when he was here before, playing with a guy like Nico, who's 2 years better, 2 years faster, 2 years more mature. I just didn't see where that was going to match. And to me, I didn't understand the Tatar deal from the beginning. Like, I just was like, why are we bringing him back? Like, it just didn't make any sense. And now he's an Albert nut. I mean, I shouldn't say that the guy is useless, but like you said, he's on the fourth line. He's not tradable. Like, you're not going to move him. So, I mean, he's a guy that's just going to end up getting released from this team. Like, it was just kind of all for nothing. Like, Bastion maybe, I think, gives you a little bit of value. Maybe you can trade him, even if it's for like a late pick or something like that. But yeah. I don't think Tatar has any value on this team.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was a little bit of a last minute, I don't want to say desperate move, but bringing him in to try and recreate some magic from 2 years ago, I thought that was a little bit misguided, like you said. But they did try. It didn't work. Keith clearly doesn't like him. That's why he's buried on the fourth line. And he's getting less than 10 minutes a game. So Bastion, on the other hand, like, I know, like, this guy's constantly hurt. You know, he just got the shit kicked out of him by what's his name on Calgary that he's still wearing the bubble for. And, you know, he's 6'4", like 210. Like, he's supposed to be the big guy that, like, sits in front of the net. And it's just like, it's like,
when, you know, Ryan, like, Lomberg fucks you up like that. Yeah, yeah. There's an issue there. I mean, I remember that fight. He couldn't get his hands out and he was pinned up against the boards, and Lomberg should have gotten a penalty on that. But regardless, you're right. You're 6'4", you're a big body. You do have some decent hands. We've seen this dude. He can score some goals. But when it's all out there, when you put it all out there on the ice, he cannot put it together.
He's either on the ice or he gets fucking absolutely pasted like 3-4 times a game. You know, like he goes Ball into four. In that
sense
for me. Yeah, he goes.
Guy that couldn't put it all together. That's all.
You'll watch him. He'll go in for a forecheck and he'll try and hit a guy. He'll completely miss. He'll fall and the defenseman will get away with the puck. It's like, what is, what are you doing? You know, like Billy Beane, like, you know, if, you know, you say he's a good size guy, what is any size good?
Yeah. Well, it's like Miles Wood when he didn't have it all together. He would play a lot in that same style, you know, when he was missing more than, you know, when things came together, he had a little extra speed that Bastion never did. But, you know, like at his worst, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Miles Wood.
So what are you going to do on that fourth line then?
Well, I don't know, man. Bring up Laguerre and Hallinen and see if that works, and then free up money to shore up the top six, because then, you know, that's Tatar makes 1.8, I think, and Bastion makes 1.35. So you free that up, that's 3 and change. Plus, we'll already have roughly the equivalent of a $5 million. Or actually, I'm looking at Puckpedia right now, and like, I don't understand how the kind of deadline space versus current cap space, but we have basically about $3 million for the current cap space. So you add those two together. Suddenly, now we can bring in a top six guy to move slot Palat down, and then Cotter can slide down. And then we have like that full top six that we wanted. The third line is regulated or is a little better where with Palat, and, you know, maybe we keep Hala, or if we upgrade Hala, but then you move Lazar over to the wing, slide Hala down to the 4C. And then that fourth line is then Cotter, Hala, Lazar. Maybe the third line is Palat, fill in new guy and Mercer. So I don't know, that's kind of how I'm seeing it potentially play out, but I do think Fitz kind of hangs on to his guys a little bit too much, and, you know, he's not as ruthless as like the Vegas GM or some other GMs that just, you know, just will fucking send a guy off for no reason.
Right.
Yeah. And especially this year when the team's doing overall so well, I wonder how big of a concern it is for Fitzgerald to fix the bottom lines, you know?
Yeah.
I think if something's not fixed, whether, you know, regardless, I think if you went into the playoffs right now with our lineup the way it is and no moves getting done, I don't think we make it out of the Eastern Conference. I just don't. I think you've got to get that secondary scoring. We've said it a million fucking times.
100% in the playoffs, because you know what's going to happen.
You're going to take away your top line.
Yep.
Yeah.
And even to a large extent, Heischer, you know?
And then we're using Heischer to go up against teams' first lines, and that's not really the best spot for his line, even though they're still good at it. It does hinder their offense. Yep. So you need a third line, like we talked about a million times, that can check the other opposing teams' best lines, that can get you some solid goals when you need them, timely goals. And the same from your fourth line. That fourth line's got to be physical, and they have to – you know, just hit everything that fucking, when you have that time on the ice, you go and make the best of it. You know, we brought up Ryan Lomberg. I loved Ryan Lomberg last year in Florida. Like, that's the type of energy fourth line guy that I would love to see on this team.
Well, like, so how do you want to fix this?
Playing with Lazar. What?
Now, Tim was just kind of talking about going after maybe top six guys and shuffling down. I mean, there's an argument that, look, your top lines are looking great, so maybe you don't want to upset that apple cart, you know, three quarters of the way through the season or whatever it's going to be. And, you know, you go after strong third and fourth line guys directly, I mean, and just leave your top lines alone. I mean, what would you prefer? I'm just asking the question. I don't know.
I think it's a definite possibility that Fitz can do if he decides that, you know what, the top six we're going to keep the way they are. He likes the way that they're playing. And then you do tinker around with that third and fourth line. I would say then if that's the case, you have to make an upgrade, like a legitimate upgrade for Marichalla. Yeah. Like you have to go and let me run this just by you reckless speculation here, boys.
Yes.
So somebody wrote an article. This is something that Dan and I talked about for years. Bobby was, you know, we talked about it, all of us together, for a long time. And I always bring this guy's name up. But there was an article out that Jonathan Toews looking to possibly sign with the team. What about Jonathan Toews as the Devils' third line center? Like, are you guys against that? I mean, I understand he's been sitting on his couch for the last couple of years, but it's still Jonathan Toews. Or do you go and try and secure the, you know, guy like Granlund from San Jose, or a guy like that? Or do you, what do you guys think about Jonathan Toews?
That is interesting. I don't know. Something kind of reeks a little bit of something like the Rangers might do, you know, more than what we would do. But I do find it interesting. I don't know. You know, it also makes me think about, is it a strong move to leave Palat where he's at, you know? Or so maybe that would be a position where you'd want to move him down to that third and, you know, get.
Well, what about that third line of Palat, Jonathan Toews, and Dawson Mercer? That's your third line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you go and you make a move for that top six.
I don't think Toews will be.
Toews will be what? What'd you say, Tim?
I don't know if you guys just froze or not. I thought, no, I don't. You, did you guys freeze or am I still?
No, you just stopped talking.
Good. I froze.
No, you're good.
Right. You're fine.
Both so. You're so perfectly motionless. I was like, did I freeze? What just happened?
No, I'm just really lazy.
A couple things on Toews. Well, A, he hasn't been on the ice in 2 years, and he's 37 years old. So. There's that, the on ice stuff, which
37 years old is another one.
Who knows what he actually would look like in reality. I don't know if he would even be up to speed by the time we would have to have him on the roster for this year. Like, I think he may be looking more for like next year. So that's thing one. Thing two is all the issues that Chicago had in their locker room. With the sexual assault stuff that happened there. Right. Apparently Toews wasn't exactly fighting against it and was pretty bad in the locker room, you know, with this kid that that got harassed. I didn't say that very well, but you get the drift of what I'm saying. Like there will be, there's a little bit of a stigma connecting him to that because he was the captain of the team when that happened. And I don't know, you know, I don't know if the Devils can touch something like that, particularly with what they just dealt with.
Yeah. We just, that McLeod just departed. So
So hockey wise, it'd be very interesting. I just don't know if I could deal with my team doing something like that and kind of,
I didn't know that about past,
it. Yeah. I didn't really either when you brought it up before, but I've been reading about it recently, just kind of rehashing it. But there's some pretty bad shit going on in there.
Oh, no, fuck it. I don't want him.
Yeah.
I don't want him. No. You know, you can stay on your couch, Jonathan Toews. I'm fine with that.
It was such a distraction last year to go through that shit with McLeod.
I know.
It was not fun. And no. It's bad. It's bad for the locker room.
Honestly, hockey-wise, if we could get someone like fucking Mike McLeod –
yeah.
That doesn't name Mike McLeod and didn't lead a fucking awful whatever he did. I don't need to bring it up, but like that's kind of the perfect guy to slot into this fucking lineup.
Absolutely. That is the kind of player we want. I mean, face-offs, strong third, fourth line play.
Piss off, Spencer. Yeah.
Just, yeah, I mean, God damn you, Michael, and your deviant behavior.
Fucking gangbang, motherfucker. McGangbang.
Yeah, he hurt this team big time.
He did.
But, you know, I know Fitz kind of has his, like me in a perfect world, I want to see two moves made. I want to see a third line center made, like a guy like we talked about, Granlund maybe, or and a winger for Jack and Brat, like a guy like Alex Tuck. That's the moves that I would make, that I would love to see made. I don't know if we have the salary cap. I don't know what we have, but, you know, we do have a couple of contracts that unfortunately are going to be aging very, very poorly after this year. And the main one is Andre Palat. Like, I don't know what we're going to do with Andre Palat after this year, especially if we go into the playoffs and he's not what we all hope he's going to be. You know, he was brought here because of that, what he does in the playoffs, and he has that switch and he can just turn it on come make game 83. If he doesn't do that this year, then there's like, to me, what the fuck is he doing on this team?
Oh, 100%. Because, you know, there is reason to be hopeful. 2 years ago, he was really a key in that playoff series win. He really was, in many ways, the Devils' most consistently hard-nosed player in that series. And I don't think they win that series against the Rangers without Palat coming on half as good as he did.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, you know, does he have it in the tank 2 years later? Nothing you've seen this year makes you feel very confident about that. And I'm not going to be horribly surprised where, no, that's, he was not able to regain that form. If he does, yeah, man, it does make it all worth it, doesn't it? I mean, if he comes up looking great, he also has a different role this time around. And I don't know. I do wonder if it's just too much to play with those guys, you know, and that, like that, I don't think you just turn that switch on because it's playoff time. The functioning of, you know, feeding skilled players like those guys. Well, I don't know, though. He surprised me. He's come along pretty well through December, a little bit better than he had been doing.
Yeah, I think he's suddenly on pace for 18 goals, which would be his second highest of his career. So he's finding it out, you know, and that's why, you know, if he doesn't produce or perform in the playoffs, then we'll have to have that conversation. But if he does show out in the playoffs again, then we'll be like, all right, then we could deal with regular season Palat having ups and downs and be fine with it. Same with Holla. Remember when we went to those playoffs, Holla, he was in and out of the lineup, went on a fucking tear in March right before the playoffs, and then carried it through in the playoffs. Like, he scored the third goal in Rangers game 7, that beautiful one timer.
Yes, he did.
Just like, I just shot off my couch and like just kicked over like 6 glasses of wine doing it. But
ripped your pants off and
ripped my pants off. Just got the Jergens going.
Yeah, it was that good of a play.
Have they come here to ask you to sponsor them at all, Jergens?
No, I know. They don't respond to any of my DMs.
He has his own little side deal because he brings him up a lot. You know?
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Go to Jergens.com for 10% off.
Keyword Tim. Tim Wood.
Oh, I'm trading on your name. But yeah, so I mean, like, you know, they've been coming on. Like, ideally, Mercer and Cotter continue to start scoring because I think that alleviates some of that secondary scoring issues. I do think Holla still is a little bit of an issue. And I think realistically, that's kind of that position that is generally going to be upgraded, that sort of high-end bottom six guy, maybe like a third line type of player that we're gonna wind up getting, a sort of center wing versatile. Like, Fitz has already said it, and the one thing that he always does is he fucking tells you what he's gonna do. It's pretty funny.
Well, it makes sense, you know. I mean, he's not, you know, he's not this one of these general managers that, like Dan brought up with the Rangers, that are just gonna go after the shiny new toy that's out there. Like, these are needs, these are people that I want. And he's also doing it to let other general managers know that, you know, there might be guys that aren't necessarily on the radar, but if they know, wait a second, Fitz is looking for a guy like this, let's call New Jersey and see if they're interested. I think that's the way to do it. Be just upfront with what it is you're looking for, what you think your team needs. It's not a fucking secret. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I a long time ago, I did an internship with the Rangers, and I lived in New York. It was a job in sports. Fine.
God, tell us about your.
But I shadowed Neil Smith for a day, who was the GM at the time, and that motherfucker was on the phone more than like my 15-year-old daughter. Like, he's just chattering away, like talking to the GMs, like just the iterations of what they set up. They're constantly telling what I'm needing, what I need to give up, what I'm willing to give up, what I need, what I'm willing to give up. I like this guy, I like that guy. So, and they have a pretty good stable of and sense of what's generally kind of available and what generally those guys are kind of looking for. Like, you look at that Timo deal, like, you know, that wasn't just a one-for-one swap. There are like 13 guys in that deal. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a negotiation. It's like, I want this guy. And they're like, I want this guy. And you're like, no, you can't have that guy. I want that guy. And then it's like, all right, well, what else do you need? Can I help your AHL farm team? You know, do you need me to restock your soda machine? Do you need me to get you a new Zamboni? You know,
Experience, Tim, though. I wonder, like, I don't know how much shadowing you got to do, but it would be interesting to meet like the average GM or Neil Smith in particular. Like, how much are they talking to not just other GMs, but, you know, people on their own in their own organization or trusted people that maybe are outside the organization about, you know, where do they get all their opinions from? You know what I mean? I mean, they're watching everything. They got their own opinions, but I would think like, if this is my job, man, I gotta look for, you know, the diamond in the rough. And like, you know, you're not going to find that on your own as one person as easily as if you have a network there. Scouts. Like, I mean, there's scouts out there. They're hiring their own scouts. So I'm just really curious what a day in a life is like. How much are they reaching out to their scouts, to, you know, other guys that, you know, they used to work with that work somewhere else, everything else, you know?
Yeah. So like, you know, they had meetings with the in-office scouting staff with a couple people called in, you know, and it's just kind of generally reporting, you know, kind of updating on guys that they had in the system, as well as, you know, kind of prepping for the upcoming draft. And they're also, you know, pro scouting, you know, that go around all the pro teams. And then they're also AHL scouts, but then there's like a head guy in Europe that oversees all that shit. But then there's like, you know, some guy who probably smokes like a pack of Marlboros a day that, you know, finds Jesper Brad on like the plains of Sweden and calls like the head guy in Europe. And it's like, holy shit, I found this guy. Like, we should get him. And it's just like the layers of trust that you need to get. And Fitz, you know, probably is like, that guy has found like three great players. Like, I'm going to trust his opinion. Or you'd be like, that guy's a fucking idiot, and that's why I sent him to the plains of Sweden. And now I'm not going to trust that motherfucker for one thing he says. So they're talking to everybody all the time. I was talking to reporters. I'm sure they get a ton of information from Frank Saravelli and Elliot Friedman and all the kind of insiders. Like, what are you Uncle hearing? Puckers, you know, who's doing this?
Yeah.
They're listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
Fitz.
Relying on our expertise.
I would like to come work for you. So hire me.
I mean, basically are already. I know he's listening.
I before we wrap it up for the night, a couple other quick questions that I want to run by you. But first, Tim, you had some information about our goaltending stud who is in system here. You
want to talk about boy, this guy? Yeah, our boy.
Yeah, our boy. This year, right?
There was a lot of where did I send this to you? The Chris and Bobby one. All right, yeah. So yeah, Mikhail Yegorov. I don't know how you actually say that.
Yegorov. So
he's the guy that we got with one of the picks back from Marino.
Yeah.
In the second round last year. And you know, the big deal was Salayev was like our big pick. You know, that was our 10th overall pick, first rounder. That's obviously gonna be the bigger deal. But you know, this guy being the goalie, we had number one on the list. So he plays for the Omaha Lancers in the USHL. Fun fact, I almost got kicked out of the boarding school I went to and was lined up to go play for the Omaha Lancers at one point, but I didn't get kicked out. So anyway, side story. So
you're such a fucking type of guy that went to a freaking boarding school. Ugh.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Uh-huh. I went to Lawrence.
Really?
Public school kids here.
Sorry.
It's hard to believe, right?
I went there to play hockey.
Yeah, and you're going to make fun of Steve Valiquette because he's got that my dad owns the dealership kind of vibe, and you went to a boarding school.
I was a day student, and my mom drove a Volvo.
Nice. That's cute.
There she did. All right, let's talk about the Omaha Lancer.
Yeah, so Yegorov. Yegorov. He set a new Omaha Lancers.
It's called Jägermeister.
Now, I can play a little. Well, Chris, I sent this to you, so we can't play a little game with you. But Dan, I'll give you a guess.
I didn't read it.
Give you a guess on the number of saves he made.
Public school and all.
They lost 4-1. And Omaha Lancers are one of the worst teams in the USHL. So they lost 4-1, but he set a new franchise record for saves. What do you think that number is?
Well, franchise record is going to be really high, I would assume.
I got a guess.
I'm going to put it in the 60s somewhere, maybe 65.
I was going to go 72.
Dan wins Price is Right rules. It was 66.
66. Nice. Oh, wow. 66. Holy shit.
Fucking saves.
They had 70 shots on goal.
70 shots on goal. That's how bad.
That's like some of my men's leagues games.
So,
the guy
that does the play by play for the Lancers, he said, Yegorov is an elite USHL goaltender. I'm privileged to call saves and repeated larcenies on a nightly basis. The New Jersey Devils may have the heir to Martin Brodeur on their hands. Look out, Terrier Hockey and Hockey East. Terrier Hockey is BU. That's awesome. Where he's going next year to play for.
Yeah.
I think I pumped the brakes on the heir to Martin Brodeur, but it's pretty good. Yeah.
Which is like, you know, that's if anything, maybe he's the heir to like Curtis Joseph, right? Because we've talked about this before. It's one thing to be a great goaltender on a team that's going down in flames, giving you, you know, 60 or 69 shots on goal. That's not a good team there. You know, and it's great to put on a goaltending clinic and be the star of the show, but that is not the same thing as being like the man who can hold it down in a one goal game. You know, it's totally different skill set. Not to knock Curtis Joseph, but it seemed like he had more success being on lesser teams than being with really good teams.
Yes, that's actually a really good.
Who would want to get this guy on their team and in their system and see what he can do with a good team, right? So that doesn't say you can't do that. That's definitely true.
And it'll be good for him to go to BU, and there's, you know, a lot more structure, and, you know, he'll be playing for Pandolfo, so we'll have a pretty good pipeline to check on him. But Devils have a nice little goalie pipeline kind of arranged here, you know, and with Dawes and Poulter, and then Malik, who's playing over in Finland, who's been doing great in Finland, and now this kid. So, you know, we
never wish that one of these young guys was in Allen's spot just to get the experience of being Markstrom's backup.
Yes.
I mean, because I like what we got coming up the pipeline, but I would hate for them to not get a chance to benefit being underneath Markstrom, who's been such a, you know, a number one professional, and what that might do to them to work with him, you know?
This is the question that I'm curious about. So we know we have Markstrom this year and next year. We also know that Jake Allen is done after this year. We're not going to re-sign him. Yeah, so next year's goaltending duo really does look like Nico Dawes backing up Jacob Markstrom, right? Like, I think we can
Sounds like it makes sense. That. Yeah.
Right.
And so that's Dawes, kind of what Dan was talking about, you know,
So we got Dawes, but then after next season, you do have a decision to make, you know? Sure. I mean, do you then decide, and I know it's all going to stem from, you know, how the Markstrom plays next year and everything, but just speculating here recklessly. if Jacob Markstrom, you don't sign him after next year. Now this team's window, Stanley Cup window, is now officially open. Like, I believe this year is going to be the last year of kind of those trials and tribulation. What kind of team is the Devils? I think after our playoff run this year, it'll be like, all right, we know who they are, and now that window's open, and they can win cups for the next 4 or 5 years if we take care of that problem. Like, we do have a goaltending problem in 2 years. Is it going to be Nico Dawes? Is Jägermeister going to do 1 year, be, you know, playing for sexual harassment? And then come back and play.
Did you just call Jägermeister?
Yeah, he's the Jägermeister. It's a lot easier.
We're setting up deals for this kid already.
Yeah,
when he turns 21.
Like, what do you think? 2 years, or is he gonna, you know, and then he'd come into the system, and then another 2 or 3 in Utica. Next thing you know, we have this heir to Martin Brodeur who's ready to play when this team's window closes. Like, that's one way it could play out.
It's too far to say, you know, it is very possible too, like during next year's Markstrom's last deal. There might be other goaltenders already out there that, you know, are going to be coming up for possibility of getting them that you're going to be tempted by. But okay. So you can't rule that out. And I don't even know. I'm sure we could probably look at the contracts and see right now, but boy, I don't know. And, but I think it really is something I want to do now more than later. Like you said, the Devil's window is officially opening, and you don't want to wait before you have that, you know, good homegrown goaltender, unless you have real doubts about being able to produce him, you know. And there's really only one way you're going to find out. That's what led me to think this, you know, that we really, as much as I liked having this duo of Allen and Markstrom, right now I feel like, yeah, but the downside is clearly not getting these guys, you know, working with Markstrom now, preparing for, you know, to see if we could keep one of them when he's gone, if they are prime time ready, because it's an important window, right? And you definitely don't want to backslide after Markstrom. You know, you paid for the great goaltender for 2 years and then said, oh, well, you could try Dawes, and if he doesn't work out, maybe Poulter. Now we're looking at, like, you know, what the scenario was last year. And
that's it. And honestly, both Dawes, Malik, Brennan, and Poulter's deal is actually, he's an RFA next year.
Yeah.
And then Dawes, Malik, and Brennan are all RFAs a year after that. So we will literally have no goalies under contract in 2 years.
Good point.
So, you know, I suspect, like, I liked the flashes that Dawes showed, particularly, you know, like he came back after getting the two new hips, and, you know, then he just got thrown into the fire, and when Lindy just ran him out there for like 10 straight games or something fucking ridiculous like that and just ran him into the ground. But I think he showed some great flashes. Malik, who's playing really well, he's only 22. Brennan is also another guy who's pretty good, as is Poulter. They're all, you know, early 20s. But there's also the goalie development, you know, has always kind of had this traditional model of you have to go to the AHL and play, you know, 2-3 years, and then you have to do this and have to do that. Yeah. Now I think we're kind of breaking that down a little bit. Like Dustin Wolf, who's in Calgary, jumped that a little bit. The kid that we just played in Anaheim, yeah, I think he's only like 23. So,
and Askarov, another guy, he's young. Yeah, and we just played him,
and he, you know, so that sort of traditional model of you need a certain amount of time in each league to develop, I think is kind of isn't necessarily like the right way to do things. It all depends on the individual. So,
well, it's an interesting,
sorry.
Well, I went on to the Undrafted Hockey Fan podcast yesterday with Brad, and I was, you know, we were talking, he's a Red Wing fan, and we were bullshitting and stuff, and I was asking him some questions about the Red Wings, and it kind of, he believes like this whole Steve Yzerman plan is not even, like, you haven't even seen the fruits of this thing yet. Like all the guys that they've drafted and everything, they have such a plethora of talent in the minors that, like, Yzerman overcooks these guys. Like, he believes that they should get as much time as possible down there. And major club, main club be damned, these guys are going to marinate down in the minors before, so we know that they're ready when they come up. Now, I don't know enough about Detroit Red Wings and their farm system to really know how that stacks up, but I'm of the belief, too, like, I think Buffalo is so bad because they didn't put any of their big studs down there. Like, they had everybody that they drafted, all their main guys, you know, Dahlin and Powers and all these guys, they just went right back into playing in the NHL and they didn't have time. So there's got to be that happy medium. I don't believe that every goalie has to fucking stay down in the minors until they're 27, 28 years old. And that seems to be what teams were doing for a lot over the last, you know, bunch of years. Like, Brodeur came up when he was, what, 23? He won the Calder at 22 or 23?
Yeah.
I mean, he just turned out to be amazing for his whole fucking career. Like, that can happen. So I'm not against, you know, I think Nico Dawes is going to get more from backing up Jacob Markstrom next year than he ever will playing in Utica. I really believe that. He will get more from being Markstrom's backup next year. And I think we'll have a good idea of where Dawes is. Hi, hon. What are you doing? Getting firewood?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I like Dan said, like, I don't like the uncertainty, but it also opens up a world of possibilities. Yeah, we have no idea what, you know, if a goalie emerges that's going to be a free agent or available for a trade, you know, on a guy on a team that's falling apart, like the Rangers. And if Shesterkin suddenly becomes available, then maybe we can flip, you know, we could flip Dawes and Yegorov.
You know, the main reason I wouldn't watch Shesterkin is I don't want the Maven mad at me. Stan Fischler fucking hates Shesterkin, and I love every minute of it. I love reading anything and everything he ever writes about Shesterkin. I mean, this guy, he's, you know, Stan's been around forever. The years are on him, and he's like this one old man who's got this one thing he hates he will not shut up about, and it's Shesterkin. He loves it.
It totally is.
It's fantastic. I mean, Shesterkin, unfortunately, I don't know what Stan's doing because now he's on IR. It was like, probably got some extra time out of this. Like, he's not about to have a fucking heart attack with his angry tweets about Shesterkin.
He's just sitting in a cryo chamber.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's got some cold war when Igor comes back. Yeah, I wonder if he's got a little Cold War, like, hate that he's like bringing back or something, you know?
It could be.
It's a Russian thing? You think that's what
maybe
it is?
It seems a little extra hostile. You know, I mean, to some extent, like, Stan loved Lundqvist, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, Lundqvist was similar in some ways. He wanted to be well-paid, a New York guy, and that was, you know, I mean, was Shesterkin that much more greedy, you know? Somebody's going to be the highest paid person, Stan. Somebody has to. Shesterkin really has a horrible argument for being, you know, if not the, but one of the top three paid goaltenders out there. I don't think he does.
It's not that I think that he has a argument and doesn't have an argument to be the highest paid goalie.
Yeah.
I just think when you look at some of the goalies under him, I've said this forever now, I just find it fucking mind-boggling that this dude got paid more than
I agree. But Iggy Piggy, I mean, he's getting really fucking personal. It's hilarious.
Yeah, he is. But Danny,
it's so red. It's like, you know, it's very Gran Torino of him. He's just like, you know, it's just like just this old guy latches onto the one thing. I remember my grandfather got so mad about the price of peas and would not let it fucking go for like 3 months. This is like 15 years
listen
ago.
Listen to this anymore, Grant. I'm not saying you're wrong. Just
I know, 99 cents for peas. I'm like, Grandpa, that's, you know, that's how it works. But you get so mad. I remember this to this day.
So my grandfather was the biggest racist in the world. So yeah, the things that he used to get angry about. Yeah. I can't really repeat that.
I don't know. My grandfather was from Texas. He would give him a run for his money. This was in Texas.
Mine was a horrible human being.
Yeah, mine was from Alabama. So I think we're all in that generation where
mine was from fucking Brooklyn. Explain that shit.
No, Brooklyn's very. My father's from there. You know how Brooklyn is. At least back in those generations. Don't come. You know, it was all like what's that movie? Bronx Tale. You know, stay out of the neighborhoods and shit.
Yeah, we just watched that the other night.
Yeah,
my son wanted to watch it. He had a couple of movies that he wanted to watch with us, and you know, so he's like, Dad, you know, let's. So I'm like, well, what do you want to see? What have you heard? You know, so he mentioned Bronx Tale, so we watched that. He loved it. And he's like, well, what should we watch next? So I'm like, all right, this is my choice now. I get to kind of now introduce you into, you know, some. So we watched True Romance. And he loved it because it's a fucking great movie.
Oh, that's a great movie. Speaking of racism, one of the best racist dialogues of ever written. Walken, Dennis Hopper scene is fucking incredible.
He's watching it, my son, and he's just like looking at me, like doesn't know if it's okay to laugh at that, you know. And I'm like, it's a movie, dude. It's funny. It just go with it, okay? Everything has to be fucking politically correct. You can laugh at certain things, even if it is off color. So yeah, he was a little uncomfortable at first, and then you know, of course, fucking loved it. So
Have you done the real litmus test with him with Blazing Saddles?
That's a tough one for my kids to get their heads around. They're like, oh, this is just awful.
It's satire.
Yeah, exactly.
It's making fun of the racists.
What should we watch next?
Was he like in the sort of gangster genre, or you're kind of over?
I think he liked True Romance more. I think he liked a little bit more of the
Then go with the Tarantino's. You know,
that's
did
what
he
I
see all saying. Of
them? Yeah,
no, we haven't. We just started with his first, even though he didn't direct it. I know, but So we start with True Romance, and then I didn't, you know, don't have to necessarily go in order.
No, but you know, to get him hooked on Tarantino, I don't think you'd jump right into Jackie Brown next. No, instead, you're going to show him maybe Pulp Fiction, then Reservoir Dogs. I would go those that order.
Django.
He would probably dig Django. It's a little bit more modern too. Like, you know, as far as
the cinematography is a little more modern. You kind of got to grade him. I think you got to hook him in with Pulp Fiction.
I was leaning towards Kill Bills for the next one.
Yeah, it's great. I don't think you're going to go wrong with Kill Bills. It's, you know, your investment in two movies and, you know, I don't know.
Is he into that type of shit? Like
we dig the heroin part of it.
Comic booky thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the, you know, the kind of old samurai movies.
Yeah.
And, you know,
all right. Then that's a good one.
I do like Kill Bill a lot. And then I was thinking maybe like, I know Pulp Fiction has to be in there. It's just, I've seen that movie so many fucking times. Like, I don't want to watch it again, but I know I'm going to have to take one.
You know what? I feel the same way, but every time I watch it, I'm like, fuck, this is fucking a movie. Like, you almost forget how good it was. And everybody in it is so strong.
Stinking Inglorious Bastards.
Oh, that's a good one.
Fucking phenomenal movie. Like, that's actually one of my favorite movies of all time.
And even, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, like, it's another fucking great one. Like,
I don't know if is he aware of the Manson murders and shit?
Yes.
Okay. Then he might dig that, because even though it was more recent, you know, it has like that historical context that I don't know if every kid his age gets.
Well, I kind of explained to him, like, he knew who Charles Manson was. And then I told him, like, we were talking about movies, and because I mentioned Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and he's like, what is it about? So I kind of give him the quick backstory, and I'm like, and then Tarantino in a few of his movies has this awesome way of just retelling history. So he retells the Manson murders through, you know, Rick Dalton and his character or whatever. And so I explained to him who Sharon Tate was and all that. So he knows about that. And then I also told him too, like, the end of World War II is Inglourious Basterds. Like, that's absolutely how the fucking war should end it. That's brilliant, you know. But
amazing watching that, definitely.
Yeah, so I was thinking Kill Bills, and then maybe Inglourious Basterds, maybe Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and then kind of go back to Pulp Fiction. But you guys think you got to kind of go with Pulp Fiction right off the bat?
I don't know, man. You make a good argument. I don't think you can go wrong going that way. I probably would just leave Reservoir Dogs and Jackie Brown to the end, because I think you got to already Jackie like Brown. Jackie Brown's fantastic.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's kind of a different.
It is different.
You know, it's not like if you didn't know it was Tarantino, then you wouldn't necessarily immediately suspect. Like, he has kind of a certain vibe, particularly with that genre or that generation of movies that he was making. Like, Django is obviously a little different and more kind of modern in terms of cinematography.
And everything's less over the top, too.
The Hateful Eight is actually one of my sneaky favorites.
That's another one.
It's fantastic.
Like, they're just all fantastic.
It really is.
I'd go Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs. I like Dan's order. I like Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs. You show them those two, then jump to Django. But then you can go back to the gangster area, show them, like, Casino and Donnie Brasco. And then jump back. No? No?
I fucking hate Casino.
Oh, you don't like Casino? No, I liked it. It's all right. It was pretty good. It has some good stuff in it.
I liked it.
What part did you hate?
I liked it better when it was called Goodfellas.
There was a little bit of, you know, trying to remake Goodfellas, but I mean, I gotta say the principal guys in it, they were fun.
I mean, look, Goodfellas is a great movie. Casino is okay. I'll say that. I don't fucking hate it. It's okay. Seriously. I think Sharon Stone plays crazy great in that movie. I'll give her that.
Her husband / pimp. What was his name again? James Woods, right?
James Woods.
I mean, he was pretty good in that. I think he might be my favorite James movie.
It might be.
James Woods did a movie called True Believer back in the 80s. He played like this burnt out lawyer. Robert Downey Jr.'s in it. And Robert Downey, he had a famous case, James Woods or whatever. But, you know, after he had that case, he just turned into kind of, you know, just taking up bullshit cases for enough money to buy weed and bullshit like that. And Robert Downey Jr. comes on, and he's a big fan of his. And he ends up working with them. And of course a case comes up and it's the unsolvable case, you know, can you free my son? He didn't murder all these people. And, you know, of course then he gets dug in and he solves the case. That's a fantastic movie with Robert.
I don't remember this one.
And James Woods. Yeah.
True. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah.
I thought you were trying to describe The Falcon and the Snowman at first, but
I didn't see that.
That's a good one.
Isn't that about like Cold War spy shit?
Yeah, kind of. They kind of get sucked up into that and lawyers involved and Sean Penn's in it. It's pretty good.
I got to write both these movies down. I'm going to watch them.
Yeah, I mean, they're older, but I have not seen True Believers. I should check that out.
You could also show them the speaking of Robert Downey Jr., the 80s comedic sidekick arc that Robert Downey Jr. went on with Back to School and Johnny B. Good.
Yeah, definitely.
Johnny B. Good. Holy shit, I forgot about that movie. Yeah,
me too. I mean, Back to School, I never forget about. I love
Back
that.
Back to School. He was Derek, the fucking roommate, was the best, one of the best parts ever. He was awesome in that. And then he went with Less Than Zero, which is another movie that I didn't like. I know everybody loves that movie. I can't stand Less Than Zero. I don't know. It's just
I don't even Andrew remember
McCarthy's,
it.
Honestly, just, he annoys me, and yeah, not a fan.
You could also go through the Nicolas Cage universe too and do Con Air and all that stupid shit. Yeah. Snake Eyes. Yeah.
Watched Snake Eyes the other day, or like maybe a couple months ago. I think the only good thing about that movie is that it takes place in Atlantic City. That might
be a pretty bad movie, but I enjoy Nicolas Cage. I think he's such a ridiculous person that it's just hard not to enjoy him.
He will go over the top hard for you. You know, he definitely throws everything into it. Bad Lieutenant.
What the hell was the name of the movie? My wife and I watched it, and it suits Nicolas Cage great because his whole character, he plays Dracula, and I can't remember the freaking name of it. Who's Dracula's guy that starts with
Renfield?
An R.
Renfield.
Yes.
Yeah, it's Renfield.
So this is the movie Renfield, and that's actually because he's gets to play as overacting, you know, Nicolas Cage as possible to fit the role. It's fantastic.
Yeah, that's the reason his wheelhouse. Did you, by the way, did you see Nosferatu at all? Did you gotten
no,
see that?
No, I
one?
Didn't, haven't seen it. Did you see
we
it?
We saw it. Yeah, we I saw it, and it. I. Yeah, it, you know what? I don't know. I'm on the fence. It was like beautifully shot. There's a lot of good things about it. There's a lot of things I did not like. I'll wait till you guys see it.
Is it better than Bram Stoker's Dracula?
I'll tell you what, in a way, no. I mean, in some ways, yes. I love Keanu Reeves for being Keanu Reeves, but come on, dude. Him doing that accent, that whole movie was kind of painful. It's one of my favorite movies. Gary Oldman's amazing. I do love it, and it still remains my favorite Dracula movie because I wanted to like Nosferatu more. I thought like it was maybe had potential to be a little less cheesy, but there was just some things that, you know, they removed some of the cheesy elements and putting really annoying elements instead that I just did not like. So it's a kind of a mixed bag for me on that movie. I just didn't like it as much as the Bram Stokers. And I just thought like everybody was given, what's his name, the Skarsgård guy, a lot of credit. I found his portrayal of Dracula, like I could not get into it at all.
Okay.
And I'm like, I'm not trying to compare you to Gary Oldman, but Gary Oldman was... He was awesome in that.
He's no Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, exactly. It was almost like kind of over the top like that, but in a more subtle way where basically you're just listening to him garble through what sounds like he's got blood in his throat the whole movie. Like you just couldn't. It was just annoying. Rough. Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah.
Bram Stoker's Dracula.
I do want to see that.
I love that. I saw that in the movie theater when that came out, like 92 or whatever. And I thought the cinematography, the filming of that movie was fantastic. And I watched it recently. I hadn't seen it in years. And okay, I can get past Keanu Reeves attempting to do an English accent. He's terrible at it. But the movie's so good. The movie's so good, man.
How dare you besmirch Keanu Reeves like that.
Have you ever seen the Bram Stoker Dracula?
Yeah.
And all you right, know, think you think gonna... that Willem Dafoe as like the Van Helsing kind of character.
Yeah, he was Van Helsing.
He's good. Yeah. Well, I think they had a different name for him. And Nosferatu has a bunch of different names.
Oh, Nosferatu. Right?
Yeah, he's Count Orlok and stuff instead of Count Dracula. It was a whole legal thing and why they did that back in the I don't know.
Who played teams? Van Helsing in Bram Stoker's Dracula?
So that's what I was going to say. Like, that was, even though we all love Willem Dafoe, and he was great.
Oh, Anthony Hopkins.
Sorry. Anthony Hopkins is tough to beat, man. He's no pushover. He was great. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I still kind of prefer Bram Stoker. I don't know. I'm probably have to rewatch Nosferatu someday to feel set on that one.
I have like hours of movie homework now. Jesus.
Yeah, yes. You do. That's it. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up anyway. So,
by the way, yeah, go USA. We won World Juniors.
Best hockey country.
Yeah, now Tim is sporting the Team USA Juniors Luke Hughes captain jersey, which is pretty cool.
Indeed.
That is awesome. I think we're going to try and be back after the Ranger game on Thursday if everybody's available. I think that would be fun. After we go and whoop up on them 7-0. Why not?
That'd be great.
Any quick picks for that game, guys? What do you think?
I'll go a little more conservative. I'll take a 4-1 win. I'll be very happy with that.
4-1.
Yeah, Rangers been playing a little better. I think 5-2 with an empty netter.
Rangers have been playing better. I'm going to say it's an overtime win for the Devs. This is a 4-3 win. Jack gets the overtime winner in Madison Square Garden to send the fans home happy. So, that's what I'm going with. So, listen, wherever you are listening to us, a like, a 5-star review, positive comment, download, subscription. Helps a little podcast that could. And let us know, what movies do we need to watch? We have, impressionable teenage children now, all of us, between ages of 15 to 18. And we need to kind of get them in on some true culture, which is our movies. So what do you guys recommend? You can, reach us on social. Yeah. You can reach us at Uncle
Puckers. And next time we got to review the Dylan movie, too. I don't know if you guys saw that. Maybe we'll get it.
No, I didn't see it. We were going to go see it on Halloween on Christmas, and we ended up not seeing it. How was that?
Well, we'll go into more, but I was prepared to hate it, and I did not hate it. So that's all I'll say for now.
All right. Okay. And we'll definitely dive into that on the next show. So, again, thanks a lot for checking us out, guys. For Tim and Dan, I'm Chris. We're the Uncle Puckers, and we'll see you when we see you.
Puckers out.